This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Touchdown, Chargers!
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Justin Herbert is so damn good.
Today's guest, columnist for The Athletic, Jeff Duncan, co-host of Good Morning Football, Kyle Brandt, from Paramount's Love and Monsters, actor Dylan O'Brien, Pittsburgh Steelers running back James Conner, plus unofficial Lakers PR executive, actor O'Shea Jackson. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Okay, hour number two of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air. If you're just joining us, you missed a first hour in which I played my greatest hits from my favorite band, Overtired and Overcaffeinated. And I was very hyped.
You always play the hits.
You like it when I'm overtired and overcaffeinated. When I'm like, all right, I didn't get much sleep, and man, I'm on my third cup of Joe.
Putting on the hits with
and,
Rich.
And you know, I'm going to overtired and overcaffeinated today after the Jets released Le'Veon Bell, put him out there. We came up with a couple of fantasy team names last hour too, right? What else did we come up? What did you write down?
Constipation of wins.
Constipation of wins. Yeah, because the Jets are all backed up right now. There's so many backups that they are playing because they're so hurt, and others who have been traded away. They're backed up and wins too. So there's I said they're over constipated and wins, right?
And then yesterday we had a great one with Jeremy Schapp, Napoleonic Courier.
Napoleonic Courier, not Jim, right?
Not Jim Courier. I've got a whole list already.
Kyle Brandt's going to be joining us from Good Morning Football in his usual Wednesday spot. Last week, you know, he was saying that he had already interviewed somebody for this week's episode of his podcast. One of the stars of one of the greatest film of all time, and we were guessing. Do you know who it is?
I haven't seen yet.
It's Tim Robbins of Shawshank Redemption.
Hey, now.
So we'll be talking about Tim, his chat with him.
Fantastic.
And everything going on in the football world, and there's a lot. There's a lot. And that's where we bring in our first guest of the day and our next on this program, 844-204-RICH, if you're on hold, stay on hold. His report in The Athletic, where he covers the Saints, he's been an observer of that team for quite some time. It was an eye-opener for us. We got it during the last commercial break. We took a look at it, and we're like, oh, my gosh, seeing so much of what's going on behind the scenes between the team and Michael Thomas, one of the best players in the NFL and a crucial player for the Saints' hopes to win a Super Bowl. And what we all agree is going to be Drew Brees' last season, we think. Jeff Duncan of The Athletic here on The Rich Eisen Show. How are you, Jeff?
Rich, I'm doing good. How are you doing today?
I am doing fine. So let's set the stage here for everybody that may not know or needs a refresher so everybody can be up to speed here. What happened with Michael Thomas and the Saints to get him in the spot where he didn't play on Monday night due to conduct detrimental, as the team said?
Well, there was a incident at practice, Rich, on Saturday, kind of the walkthrough portion of practice where they're going through third down game plan, and he engaged in, I guess it was a fight. Let's just call it a fight. I was going to say fracas because I like that word, but it was a fight with C.J. Gardner-Johnson, and, you know, it got out of hand, basically, and Michael Thomas and C.J. Gardner-Johnson were almost uncontrollable, and coaches were involved, and, you know, it got pretty ugly between Thomas. He was almost uncontrollable from the people I talked to, and I think the Saints tried to handle it as best they could. They wanted to get Thomas under control and try to reach him, if you will. And he was just unconsolable at that point. And I think his actions towards the coaches afterward is what I've been told led to. And look, it's being reported right now, Rich, that he wasn't suspended. I think that's semantics. He was sat. They sat him for a game. They fined him one game check, which was $58,000. But the wording suspension is important here because that would have opened him up to potentially losing some guaranteed money in his contract down the road. So I think the Saints were trying to avoid that, but also send a message to Thomas at the same time that this type of action is uncalled for and they're not going to stand for it.
Well, in terms of that, your story, and this is why everybody should seek it out, Jeff Duncan of The Athletic here on The Rich Eisen Show. This appears to be a, I guess, pugilistic tip of the iceberg here. Let's talk about the rest of the iceberg, about what is going on with Michael Thomas and this team that you gleaned and got in your report here, Jeff.
Well, I'll be honest with you, Rich. It's no secret, you know, around the Saints facility, internally and externally, that, you know, Mike Thomas is somewhat of a difficult guy to deal with. He's a complicated personality. He's very competitive. He's one of the hardest workers on the team. Very driven guy. It's what's gotten him to where he's at in his profession as the best receiver, arguably the best receiver in the league. But internally, I mean, he's a difficult customer at times, not always. But I think this action that happened over the weekend had more to do with a pattern of behavior that he's displayed within the building than anything else. They're just trying, I think, to send a message to Thomas that they need him to correct some of his actions internally. It's not just the fight on over the weekend. It was his reaction to the coaches who were trying to get him under control, and I guess this entire pattern of behavior is what led to what we saw over the weekend.
Well, obviously, again, you know Sean Payton. You know him well. You wrote a book, Payton and Breeze. Steve Gleason provided the foreword of this book that you wrote, The Men Who Built the Greatest Offense in NFL History. I don't know if you saw our first blush reaction. We placed it on Twitter yesterday, Jeff, when your report came out. We were just bringing it all in. I made a point that this has got to be particularly bad because Sean Payton comes from the Parcells world where you don't excuse behavior, but you do treat players differently based on how significant they play a role in your wins and losses and how important of a player you are. I mean, I told a story about Belichick saying him going to Parcells one day and saying LT was late for a meeting. Just want to let you know, referring to Lawrence Taylor, and Parcells' response is, well, why'd you start the meeting without him? And that's where Sean Payton comes from. So this has got to be particularly significant if Sean Payton is making this maneuver. And then after the game saying, we'll let you know when the time's right about what the resolution is here and when he can come back.
Yeah, Rich, that's a great point about the Parcells' influence on Payton is very strong, and there's no doubt that this was significant. It's what led them to make the action. Mike Thomas was going to play in this game on Monday night against the Chargers. He's the best receiver on the team. He's one of the best in the league. He's a leader on this team. This is a player that the Saints invested heavily in, almost $100 million last year. And when they make an investment like that, when they make a commitment, Mickey Loomis sits down with the player. He talks to his representation and says there's responsibilities that come with this investment. When we make a commitment like this, you need to become a professional. We expect more from you when we do this. And they've done that recently with Alvin Kamara. The contract that he signed recently came with other responsibilities for Alvin Kamara. He's much more involved now with being a spokesman for the team, doing media interviews. He'll be asked to do more in the community because of that. These are the professional things that you have to do as a professional athlete when you receive a commitment like that from the organization. I think that is also playing into this, Rich, with Mike Thomas. They want him to be more professional in general, and I think this was a message sent to him.
Jeff Duncan, The Athletic, New Orleans columnist, and again, author of Payton and Breeze, joining me here on The Rich Eisen Show. All right, Michael Thomas appears to have commented on your article, Jeff. He sent out a series of tweets within the last 24 hours. I would like you to interpret them for me, if you don't mind, taking them all together. He wrote, first up, you ain't a snake, but they will make you. That's first up. And then it appears to be just a few moments later, the next tweet saying, think what you want. I ain't trying to clear no rumors up. That was next up for him on that Twitter jaunt. And then later on, he retweeted somebody asking if he's healthy. Please tell me you won't be sitting out the next game. That's either a Saints fan or somebody who drafted Mike Thomas in the first round of their fantasy draft. He quote tweeted that and then responded, "I was never healthy. I was just trying to help my team get a win and heal up during the bye. Had a setback, was so close, and I take my health serious. Now I'm a bad guy. LOL," and then Bet, B-E-T. I don't know. Is he insinuating here, if you don't mind interpreting all of them together, and I'll give you the floor in a second. Is he insinuating there that he wasn't suspended because of what happened in terms of a fight or insubordination or conduct detrimental, that they're making it seem that way and because he's not yet healthy? I give you the floor on interpreting all this, Jeff Duncan.
Well, Rich, I could use a translator in my social media attempts with Mike Thomas, because this isn't the first time I've struggled to interpret what he's trying to say. Here's what I would say on that. I think clearly he's trying to avoid losing a game check, even though it's not in relative terms, $58,000 to all of us is a lot of money to an NFL player. It's not that significant, but he's trying to hang on to that by using the injury as a reason. But that would be moot, I think, at this point, because the team has already filed a letter of discipline, and he was going to play. He was in the game plan for the game. So this transgression was related to the incident that was involved. He wasn't sat because of his health, and I think he's trying to present that case probably through his representation in that regard. But I would say this, Rich, and I think it's important to say this. Mike Thomas has tried to play the last two or three weeks. He's a tough customer, and he wanted to get on the field, and the team did the right thing by sitting him. They want to be cautious. That's a finicky injury, a high ankle sprain. They had Mike Thomas talk to Dr. Anderson, the leading ankle doctor in the country, to explain to him why it's important for him to be cautious with this injury. It could sideline him for the rest of the year, but he was trying to come back sooner. That's the competitive desire and the competitiveness of Mike Thomas, and it's one of the reasons he's such a great player.
Jeff Duncan, a few more minutes left with the Athletic New Orleans columnist and reporter here on the Rich Eisen Show. Now then, this is not our first rodeo in a story like this one, Jeff, and this is not yours either, I'm sure. Why do you know this stuff as we try to move this towards how does this all get resolved, if at all? Why is this out there? Isn't this supposed to be in-house stuff? And by the way, I'm very appreciative of your reporting. but do we read into the fact that you know this, that you're reporting it, that it's gotten to somebody with a keyboard and a platform? Should we read into that?
No, I don't think so. Look, I think, we don't, in this world we're in right now, 24/7 coverage, especially the NFL, these things tend to take on a life of their own on social media. I think the Saints are going to handle this just fine. They have strong leadership in the locker room. I talked to Drew Brees about it after the game Monday. All the team leaders on this team have already talked to Mike Thomas. Sean Payton, you know him, Rich. I mean,
yes.
He's going to handle this thing. They already have handled it. I don't think it's going to blossom into anything more than what it has already. I think we've seen the tip of the iceberg, and it's going to go the other way. I really believe that the strength of this team is going to ward off any blossoming or mushrooming problem with Mike Thomas, and this was just a case of we don't want it to become an Antonio Brown situation or something that's going to be bigger down the road. We want to head this off at the pass, if you will, and this is a great player with a great career in front of him. The team has made a huge investment in him. They don't want to see this continue to spiral the wrong way. And I think it could on another team, but not with this team, with the veteran leadership and the coaching staff that's intact here.
Now, I guess you touched upon my last question for you, Jeff, because you're seeing all the comparisons where, Mike Tomlin won a Super Bowl. Ben Roethlisberger is a first ballot Hall of Famer. Sean Payton's won a Super Bowl and a very strong-willed, brilliant head coach. Drew Brees is a first ballot Hall of Famer. Saints are an organization that's not in flux. Steelers are never an organization that's in flux. And we saw what Antonio Brown did Now, I guess Mike Thomas is not, you know, Facebook living out Sean Payton calling Bruce Arians names, you know, but how similar is this? Is this something similar? You're already seeing the comparisons. Le'Veon Bell's been released here. You know Mike Thomas better than we do. We have had him on the show. He couldn't have been more professional and open, even though I'm a Michigan man, and he probably despises me just for that alone. But, you know, seriously, like, is there any there to these comparisons that you're already seeing?
No, I think it's premature, but I think it could get there if it's not addressed. And, you know, Sean Payton uses a phrase a lot that he learned from Bill Parcells about tending the garden, you know, that coaching and managing a locker room is like gardening. You've got to do it every day. If you don't, it gets out of hand. And that's what Sean Payton's doing here. He's gardening. I mean, he's making sure this does not get out of hand down the road. Greater issue for this team down the road, especially for a team that has Super Bowl aspirations and expectations. Players on the team have already said this is a Super Bowl or bust season. It could be Drew Brees' last year. And I think Sean Payton's just trying to handle this situation before it.
No, I know.
Potentially could mushroom into something bigger.
I hear you. But these three tweets say this is not particularly buttoned up just yet. But we'll see. Post bye week, crystal ball it for me, Jeff Duncan. Is Mike Thomas suited up, ready to go against Carolina? Is he out there?
Well, I think we'll know more after today if he addressed the team at the team meeting this morning and apologized, which I was told is something he was going to do. I think it'll be behind him, and he'll be back in the lineup right away. I'll be surprised if he's not.
Jeff, thanks for the call. Again, congrats on your book, Payton and Brees, Jeff Duncan, forward by Steve Gleason, who is an amazing human. And this reporting, it was eye-opening, and I look forward to getting you back on to revisit if it's necessary.
Anytime, Rich. Thanks for having me.
You got it. That's Jeff Duncan, at Jeff Duncan _. If you want to follow him on Twitter. What a story. Man, can't have a bigger name baller than Mike Thomas at the receiver position. He's on par with DeAndre Hopkins. Name who you think is a big-time baller at the position in the NFL, and he is on par with that individual. And the first-team All-Pro player last 2 years is easily, and I know Kamara's terrific, easily the most important player for Drew Brees to try and win a Super Bowl from here on out in what appears to be his last year as a professional. Got to get him. Got to have him. Can't have him. Punching people out, going on Twitter, and all of that. Can't happen. Kamara is tremendous. He is so great. There's no doubt about it. Mike Thomas, at his position, is remarkable. And clearly, whatever is making him, and this part of Duncan's story, whatever is making him grind gears is what makes him great. Just grind the gears of the people on the other side of the line of scrimmage. That's all. I'm sure that's what we're trying to tell him. Don't grind gears on this side of the line of scrimmage. That side. That one. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. We'll take a phone call, and then the next phone call we take will be from Kyle Brandt as well. Good Morning Football. And he spoke to Tim Robbins.
Right.
Ready to go down your Shawshank Redemption wormhole,
yeah.
Sir?
Fantastic.
It's one of your favorite movies.
Absolutely.
Coming back. Hey folks, now there's more ways to be a team with Microsoft Teams. You can bring everyone together in one space with a new virtual room, collaborate live, drawing, sharing, building ideas with everyone on the same page. And you can make sure more of your team is seen and heard with up to 49 people on screen at once. Learn more all about the newest Teams features at Microsoft.com/Teams. Back here on Peacock, our radio audience is less than a minute away from rejoining us as well. And then Kyle Brandt will be joining us from Good Morning Football. I want to sneak in a phone call before Kyle as well. Always an entertaining chat. Dylan O'Brien will be joining us. At what point do I welcome in the members of the Dylan O'Brien fan club that normally don't tune into the Rich Eisen show on Peacock? When do I do that? The end
probably
of this
now.
Hour?
Yeah, sure.
Probably
sure,
now
sure.
To get them involved.
Well, I don't know if they're. I don't know how far in advance they join.
I think you put the word out early.
We'll see. We'll notice when the heart emoji Twitter names start popping up in the old timeline in the mentions.
I don't know, Mike. There could be somebody out there who wants to get to know a 55-year-old boat owner. 54. From the marina. 54-year-old
boat owner.
Owner of boats.
Owner of boats.
Maker of
Multiples.
Emmys.
I have a fleet.
Hey, everybody. Now there's more ways to be a team with Microsoft Teams. Bring everyone together in a new virtual room, collaborate live, building ideas on the same page, and you get to see more of your team on screen at once. Learn more at Microsoft.com/Teams. Pusher of buttons. Welcome back to the Rich Eisen Show.
So disrespectful.
It's not at all. I love Mike Del Tufo.
No, Rich.
All right, let's go to Ken in Indiana real quick. What's up, Ken? You're on the Rich Eisen Show.
Thank you for taking the call.
You got it.
Usually you and I talk about officiating, but I want to talk about the Indianapolis Colts.
Go for it.
Chris Ballard, you know?
Yes, I do.
Frank Reich, you know?
Yes,
Nick Sirianni.
Yes.
Now let's talk about Sam Darnold.
Sold.
I mean, Phillip is probably one and done, right?
Phil's already got a job lined up coaching high school football. So
right.
he might be, I don't know, he might want to play another year, but sold. Unless, again, I don't know what their evaluation of Sam Darnold was coming out of college. If they were really high on him and they're like, we could get Sam Darnold for a third-round selection right now, he could be in the same meeting room as Phillip Rivers right now. Jacoby Brissett can take over for Phil if Phil gets banged up right now. We could get Sam Darnold right now for a third-round selection, or screw it, we'll give the Jets one of their two back, but that they gave us so they could move up the three spots to get Sam Darnold. Don't forget that. They chose and used those first-round pick they got from the Jets to take Quentin Nelson anyway. And to protect Sam Darnold, they could have Q and Sam from the same draft right now, learning from Phillip Rivers in that room right now. Sit back, learn the system right now. That would be a tough thing for the Colts to turn down. I'll tell you that right now. That's why I think the Jets should do it right now.
Thanks, Rich.
Sold. That may be wishful thinking on my part. And that would be Sam. That would be a beautiful parting gift, a nice bouquet of roses to Sam Darnold. We'll give you to Frank Reich, who's not going anywhere, who's got a system. We'll give you a meeting room for the next several weeks and months with Phillip Rivers, and we'll give you a chance with the Indianapolis Colts, with one of the best offensive lines in the business and Jonathan Taylor to hand it off to. Sam.
Chef's kiss.
Sold. Can Joe Douglas please pull that off? I feel like one of those fantasy trades that these 12-year-olds, sixth graders are sending to my son right now. Hey, I'll trade you Mike Davis for Aaron Jones. Will you do it? By the way, that's a true trade that Xander got off.
I mean, these kids are great. That's not a horrible trade, by the way.
Mike Davis for Aaron Jones?
Mike Davis of the Panthers?
Yes, for Aaron Jones?
Look at their stats.
Yeah, but
the last couple.
Mike Davis won't be playing.
I just literally spent valuable real estate with an actual NFL head coach on Monday and Matt Rhule asking him to please still give carries to Mike Davis down the line.
I'm just thinking about the stats right now.
Dude.
It's not that.
Down the road.
I don't know. Is TJ Jefferson going to say, are you drafting smarter than a sixth grader? Is that literally what we're doing right now?
By the way, that is a fun
By the way, I have Aaron Jones on my football team. So
All right. Kyle Brandt of Good Morning Football and also of 10 Questions with Kyle Brandt on Spotify and Ringer. His guest is, in fact, Tim Robbins. He teased it last week. Good to see you, Kyle Brandt. How are you, sir?
There's no Rich Eisen that cracks me up more than unapologetically pissed off Jets. The Long Island comes out, doesn't it?
Well, I'm from Staten Island, but it's all good. It's still an island. It's just much more. It's more It's more impactful. You know, it doesn't...
How about that gangrene, Rich? How are you doing right now? Oh. Play you up, so what?
Nah, that was a Giant fan who called in prior to the season.
Who cares? It's perfect.
It's not.
I see Jets fans. You know, I'm here in the state of New York,
yes,
and I see them, mm-hmm. and you can tell. It's like, you know how if you're walking down a sidewalk and you see someone coming and you cross the street to stay away from them. That's what it is. They're so ornery and they so want to punch someone. And I think that one is pretty much the head coach, but I don't want it to be me. I avoid the Jets fans now. Wide berth.
Would you want Le'Veon Bell on the Bears? Kyle, what do you think about that one?
I think the running back position is my favorite in the game. I think he's unbelievably talented, and I don't want him anywhere close to a team that I'm rooting for. I don't want Matt Nagy, 2 weeks after they signed Le'Veon Bell, to have to answer questions from the Chicago media about, yeah, coach, Le'Veon liked several tweets that said he wasn't getting the ball enough. Your thoughts on that? Get the hell out of here. I don't want to deal with that. No way. Le'Veon Bell last year with the Jets did not have a run of 20 yards. 20 yards. There's many, many, many people who have a 20-yard run. I don't need 60. I don't even need 40. If you're that good, you got to give me a 20-yard run. I don't care who's blocking for you. I don't think the skill is there, and I think the pain in the butt factor is high. I wish him well, but no, not on the Bears, and I don't think they will.
Kyle, in the first hour, Brockman and I went back and forth trying to fill out a poll question on Twitter with four teams. We barely got to four teams, and we went Bears, Patriots, just because, you know, Bill likes taking somebody from the Jets and winning championships with them. I'm not saying that, you know, Darrell Revis is the same as Le'Veon Bell, but I think you're picking up what I'm putting down.
Yeah.
Chargers, because they're so banged up, and Texans. Those were the only four we could come up with. Am I missing any, or do you think?
Well, I just saw some really bad news about the Broncos running back situation, so maybe them, but... Listen, the Le'Veon thing's fascinating. This is a guy who said, screw it, I'm sitting out. I'm going to try to be a well-intended Joan of Arc for the running back position. Probably cost him some money, definitely cost him some wins. He's already getting paid, so do we even know for sure that he's going to play? Would he not be a guy who says, no, I'm sitting out again, and maybe someone will pick me up next year? He's mercurial, so I don't know, but... Man, that stay with the Jets. I mean, what was that? What is the lasting memory of that? I don't even know.
Well, it's just a 17-game version of writing on the cocktail napkin. You don't want to be there anymore. So it's, I don't want to be the RB of the NYJ. It's kind of really what it is. But he has tweeted out that he's got something to prove. And I think it would behoove him to get out there right now and get on with the team right now and show that he can. You know, I think that would absolutely make sense. And I think, Chris, did you write down well-intended Joan of Arc for a fantasy team?
I sure did.
Okay, did you write that one down?
Sure
I saw that you started scribbling.
Yeah.
I picked up on that one, too.
Yep.
Kyle Brandt here on the Rich Eisen Show. All right. So I know you're an Angry Runs individual.
Oh, my God.
Derrick Henry stole the soul of somebody last night, did he not, Kyle
Stole
Brandt?
It and put it in his pocket. That was a like, remember where you were event in the sport of football. Like, I'm not saying it's the Immaculate Reception or the Philly Special, but I'm going to remember that for a long time. And first person experience, Ritz, I walked away from the TV for the hot minute last night. I was doing something with the kids, and I come back and I look at my phone, and all 50 different text messages from people I knew sat next to in high school or people I work with, and you don't know what they're talking about because the text messages were like, oh, my God. And it was, oh, bleep. Oh, I can't believe it. I'm like, what? It's 2020. We don't know what's going on. What are you people talking about? Finally, I said, oh, my gosh. All right. Derrick Henry threw someone out of the stadium like Uncle Phil throws Jazzy Jeff out of the house. And that was an unbelievably perfect storm. You know what this underrated part of that? It made it so good, and Twitter loved it so much because it was Josh Norman. Josh Norman, a known provocateur, agitator, unapologetic, you respect him. If that is anonymous Bill's corner, it doesn't sing as much.
True.
You know, it had to be him, and it was so beautiful. It was the black swan. It was a perfect dance. I've never seen a better stiff arm. I don't think I can think of one.
Well, I was telling the story in the first hour of the show, Kyle, that I was sitting at my desk and at home, you know, just taking notes and doing stuff and being on Twitter and just generally hiding from my children. And I saw that moment and I went, oh, like literally made that noise. Like, oh, you know, it was one of those moments. And then the first thing I thought of was that, you know, Josh Norman ran with the Bulls in Pamplona. And I went and I got that photograph saying that that's how he was preparing for Derrick Henry. I mean, literally, that's what it was. That's literally...
That's a big bull.
It's a big bull coming at you, and you better jump over it or run away. Like, literally.
Yeah, those guys in the white jumpsuits and the red scarves, just get the hell out of there. But notice, you don't try to tackle the bull. He literally messed with the bull and got the horns. It was... Oof, I know what you mean by the sound that you made.
Yes.
The equivalent of that thing is that stiff arm that Derrick Henry threw. It was really like watching a dramatic knockout in boxing or maybe MMA. Like, I remember when Lennox Lewis was fighting Haseem Rahman, and
yes,
it was just one of these massive overhand rights when everybody just starts going to the exits before he goes to the canvas.
Right.
That was what we got from Derrick Henry. It was beautiful. That's why I love this game.
Kyle Brandt here on the Rich Eisen Show. 5 weeks in, and the story of the 2020 season. I'm going to go macro on you right now, Kyle. I don't want to forget about COVID. I won't talk about just football here.
No.
The football story of the 2020 season is what through 5 weeks of this campaign. What do you think?
I think it's Rodgers. I think it's the Packers. But don't you already feel, Rich, like we're gonna get Russell versus Rodgers Part 9? Like it's. I know that it's October. These two teams are so good. Their two quarterbacks are so good. They've played 8 times. They're 4-4 against each other. The home team has won every single time. I think as well as those teams are playing in purely non-COVID storylines, it's the two of them. Because, listen, the bloom's off the rose on the Bills now. That might have been the story if they won last night. The Chiefs have learned that they, like Xerxes, can bleed. And now we got, you know, the Raiders are fascinating, but I'm just going to go right to the cream of the crop. I'm going to go right to the two best teams we see right now, and I think it's Green Bay, Seattle. You and I have both talked to Rodgers throughout our careers, including this season. When I last did, I posed him a question directly. I said, Aaron, you've dominated the NFC North so badly. There's no competition. I said, who is your rival? Do you have a rival in the NFL? Peyton had Brady and on and on. He said, well, you know, I've played Matt Stafford the most. Like, no. Matt Stafford is not your rival, Aaron. Who's your rival?
Right.
And he didn't give an answer. And I said, I think it's Russ. He goes, yeah, we've had some good games. It was almost a reluctance to admit it, but that's the one. And I hope they meet in the NFC title game.
I know that before that. They don't meet at all in the regular season, interesting enough. But yeah, it's Rodgers and Brady coming up. I can't wait.
Oh,
I mean, what
baby.
A piece of filet mignon. Week 6, man. Rodgers and Brady coming up. 2-12s and... You know, obviously, Brady having fun with his senior moment by putting LeBron on his body in the number 4, congratulating him on his 4th title, all that stuff. You know, Brady's taking it all in. You know, hopefully for him, he can get Godwin back and everybody somewhat, moderately healthy. I can't wait for that one. That's going to be amazing this weekend.
The only thing that I would like better than the Bucs getting to the Super Bowl with Brady, we've talked about this, is the Patriots-Bucs Super Bowl. Like that is the sporting event. That is better than the Balboa Drago on Christmas Day in the USSR. That's the biggest sporting event of our time. And the Patriots are mysterious now all of a sudden. I feel like we haven't seen them in a long time. But that's the one I want. And I think Brady will get up from the turf that Khalil Mack was slamming him on.
Now, by the way, that was one of my favorite pieces of video from Week 5 was when he was sacked by Khalil Mack and Brady didn't know who sacked him. And then he saw it was Mack and he kind of like rolled his eyes, kind of like, again? Like, he kind of gave Tristan Wirfs a look, like, can we get a little help? Like, literally, that was one of my favorite pieces of video that I saw on the weekend. But all that said, you did say that you liked the Steelers before the season. They are 4-0. Chase Claypool was another guy who memed the Brady number 4 for the number of touchdowns that he had. Yesterday, I kind of pounded the table on my 4 downs that Big Ben is not getting an MVP talk, and he, like Russell Wilson, also has never received a vote for most valuable player in his career. Never. And maybe it's time to start pounding the table for him being an MVP, because unless everybody thinks his consolation prize of not being part of this conversation is the Comeback Player of the Year award he's going to get.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's at this point, who knows? That may go to Alex Smith. There's going to be a lot of competition at the NFL Honors. But what you bring up for MVP is fascinating, because it's a little like the Royal Rumble. You get the couple of guys in the ring early, and, you know, we had Russ and we had Rodgers. I think Josh Allen might have just gotten thrown over the top rope by Big John Studd. He might be out. But you get the other guys who are running in, who Roethlisberger and Ryan Tannehill is leading an undefeated team and running for touchdowns and beating the Bills and throwing. I mean, he looks great, too. So this thing is not going to be Patrick Mahomes throws 50 touchdowns and runs away with it, or Lamar runs for 12,000 yards. It's going to be down to the last month, and we got some heavyweights in there throwing punches. I agree with you about Pittsburgh. I thought they were going to win the Super Bowl before, Rich, we got to the Chase Claypool experience, which is delightful, a 6'4" Canadian receiver. The only battle that's going on I see with him, everybody likes him. There seems to be a lot of discussion about what his nickname should be, okay. And I would only ask your thoughts on it.
Please.
I saw one suggestion I adored, which was if Calvin Johnson was Megatron, this guy, being last name Claypool, is Optimus Primus. Which I really, really liked.
Okay.
I know the Canadian roots are calling him Mapletron, and then they say when he goes to the red, the black and yellow striped jerseys, he could be a bumblebee. So there's a lot of Decepticon stuff going on, yeah. But I love the Primus thread.
Okay, I will go with the Chase-tural.
Oh, boy.
Say it again?
The Chase-tural.
Kyle, don't entertain this for one
Let
second.
I can't understand the word Rich is saying.
Well, again,
I'm trying to help you, Rich.
No, okay, so yes, the Chase-tural. Matt Ryan didn't want. I then went to Matt Stafford, not knowing at the time that they were best friends, that I was offering Matt Stafford the sloppy seconds that Matt Ryan did not want. I then went back to Matt Ryan again. He still rejected that. And then I called Patrick Mahomes and I said, how about the Patrol? He laughed via text and said, no, thank you. I then went back to Matt Ryan again. You know, this is the Letterman style of humor, to take something, beat it up, and then beat it to death. This was Matt Ryan's response to
Rich,
that.
You got
to
move on. You got to move on.
He told me to move on. So I won't move on from just the fill in the blank Chirol. I could go Claytural. You know, we could do that. Pool-tural.
Did you ever try the Dactural?
Never tried it. That does sound like a nice, tasty treat at Fat Tuesdays, you know? Like you can get that could pack a wallop. By the way, Xerxes Blood might be my next fantasy team name. I wrote that one down.
That's a good one.
That's a good one.
XERXES.
So I'd like that. Mapletron is not a bad one. I kind of, you know, you gotta know that he's Canadian and you gotta know that he's tall. You know, that's the problem with that one.
Yeah, he likes the attention. Typically, when I think of Canadian rooted wide receivers who draw attention to themselves all day long, I think of Nate Burleson. But that there's a new guy here.
Ladies and gentlemen,
head out.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is Good Morning Football shots fired right there. I do think though that in the halftime segment of last night's game, Bill Cowher gave Nate the credit for angry runs.
Whoa. Yeah.
Did you hear that one?
I think what happened is, whoa, I think Nate texted him something about angry runs, and then Bill did his best to credit me with it. But listen, I'll take it. This is me screaming in my leaky basement about guys running over each other. So the fact that it goes to the CBS Broadcast Center and Bill Cowher is talking about angry runs, it's pretty awesome, Rich.
So before I let you go, sir, you dropped serious breadcrumbs last week saying that you had just gotten off the phone for this week's pod interview, 10 Questions with Kyle Brandt, Spotify and The Ringer, of one of the greatest movies of all time, one of your favorite movies ever, and a significant star, we all guessed, and it turns out to be, I give you the floor, your guest this week.
Well, I didn't pull the rug out. I didn't do the smart-ass thing and say, hey, it's Jean-Claude Van Damme from Bloodsport. No, this is real. I promise you there'd be no joke.
Yes.
And on the most recent episode of 10 Questions is the great, great Tim Robbins from The Shawshank Redemption, which is how I qualified, one of the most beloved movies ever, and one of the lead actors of that, the lead actor. And I got to tell you, unbelievably cool guy. And if you eat up Shawshank like we all do, you got to hear Tim Robbins talking about how at night during the shoot, he and Morgan Freeman would sit around and barbecue and, you know, as he put it, enjoy certain illegal activities. And I said, hold on a second.
Mm-hmm.
So you're telling me Andy and Red are sitting around, you know, smoking doobies and eating chicken wings? And then he said, and we had a basketball court where I was living, and the guy, Clancy Brown, who plays Byron Hadley, would come over and we'd play basketball. I said, Andy versus Hadley? You guys are both like 7 feet tall. How did the games go? And we get into it, and I was in heaven, and Robbins was amazing.
Okay, so many questions based off of that. Yeah. I don't have 10. I don't know if we have time left for that. But
sure.
Are you saying, did somebody post up Morgan Freeman? Is that what you're saying? Or he didn't play the basketball?
I think it might have been William Sadler who was going on Freeman, and because Freeman is good from the perimeter, but Hadley and Dufresne were on the low post, and I have pieced together who I think would be my my Shawshank starting five.
Please.
If I had to have one.
Yes, you
might. And I would be, I'd be thrilled to share it with you.
Please.
If I was going to make a starting five from the crew, in my point guard, I got young Tommy, who comes in with the sideburns and has to learn how to read. I got Haywood. Haywood at the shooting guard, mouthy, good stroke. Byron Hadley is going to be my center, my man in the middle. Red is going to be my small forward. I think he's tall. He shows athleticism with the baseball glove. And then Andy Dufresne is our power forward with Boggs, the sixth man coming off the bench.
That's some aggression off the bench.
All right, now give me the starting five from the Green Mile and who wins.
Oh, well, look, I can go all day. Do you even need anything after coffee? The coffee you can just sit there in the middle of and just eat up all the paint. Coffee likes to drink, of course, that is. And then you take Percy. Percy's going to be the agitator because he just annoys the hell out of everybody. And then I want Mr. Jingle, the magic mouse, running the point guard. And after that, we're going to beat everybody by 30. It's going to be like the dream team against Estonia. We'll just run it up on everyone.
We should do all Stephen King adapted films, starting five, and like do some sort of Stephen King madness, and let's go.
I love it.
Rich, you don't need to get us started. You know, we'll do the Running Man, and our front court of Whitman, Price, and Haddad will all be all-stars. You know that.
The problem is what Whitman, Price, and Haddad are we getting? The real one or the ones that have been put on the island to hide the entire construct of the dystopia? What are we doing?
Do you remember them?
Great question.
Basking in the Maui sun, Whitman, Price, and Haddad.
Whitman, Price, and Haddad is fantastic. Oh. What do you got? Go for it, Chris, before we go.
Kyle,
we can't say goodbye, Kyle.
We just got to bring it up. I mean, I hate to go down this road with you, but it is the anniversary of the Steve Bartman play. Where were you? What do you remember about that moment?
I remember it vividly. This is one of my most vivid sports memories of my life. In the Steve Bartman play, which I believe was in October of 2003, I was on the set of NBC's Days of Our Lives, playing Philip Kiriakis. I was doing a scene with my father, Victor Kiriakis, who was, of course, played by John Aniston, the real-life father, Jennifer Aniston. And we couldn't watch the game, and the camera guys on their little monitors, they would get like a TV feed on the big of their giant cameras they had then. And I remember the Cubs were way up, and I said, this is going to be incredible. We're going to the World Series. It's going to be amazing. I've been a Cub fan my whole life. And the guy on camera one, after every take of the scene that I kept messing up, would say, another run for the Marlins. Another run. He would lean over and he'd say, it's not good. It's not good. I said, what the hell are you talking about? It's not good. Let's close this thing. Go to the series. Finished the scene. Finally, I was terrible in the scene. I was just, John Aniston was just carrying me. And I find out what happened. And I never forget. I watched that. I was devastated. And then later that night on SportsCenter, our friend Dan Patrick got Baba Booey'd by Captain Jenks. It was a crazy night.
Like sands through the hourglass.
Right.
Oh my gosh!
The wild one.
You didn't think that would be the answer to that?
I did not. It's today. 17 years ago today.
Oh man.
No, that's crazy. Honestly, one of the true black eyes on the Chicago sports fan base. I genuinely believe that. It was a terrible, pathetic display, and I actually am kind of ashamed of that as a Chicagoan, what they did to that guy. Moise Alou's reaction didn't help, but that was human. The worst part about it, we don't need to go down the wormhole, it was game six.
Yes.
They had Kerry Wood going in game seven, a game in which Kerry Wood hit a home run, and they still couldn't win the game. So don't put it all on Bartman, wherever he is in his subterranean bunker in the north suburbs somewhere. Well, leave that man alone.
Alex Gonzalez had the double play ball right there.
Yes.
And he went through the wickets.
Torn.
And also, by the way, Buckner, everybody thinks Buckner played. It was game seven of the 86 World Series. It was game six. So
game six.
You know, there's many different ways to go. 10 questions with Kyle Brandt on Spotify and Ringer. I will definitely get that Tim Robbins episode because I'm sure you had to go in the Bull Durham direction a little bit as well with him,
imagine. Oh, big time. I made him say, Tim, tell me right now, why is Bull Durham Field of Dreams and Major League? And he took a run at it, buddy. That Nuke LaLouche took back and buzzed one at
Fantastic.
Me.
10 questions with Kyle Brandt podcast were on Spotify and The Ringer. And, of course, Good Morning Football, 7 a.m. every single day. Love our chats every Wednesday. I texted you that. I'll say it again. Thank you.
It's the best. Appreciate it. I look forward to it every week, man.
Right back at you. That's Kyle Brandt, everybody.
See you, buddy.
Xerxes blood, everybody. That's not a bad one.
That's a good one.
Two X's in it, too.
Yep.
Okay, everyone. 844-204-RICH. We'll take your phone calls when we come back. Unpack that a little bit more. Oh, boy, that was funny. Hey, folks. Now there's more ways to be a team with Microsoft Teams. You can bring everyone together in one space with a new virtual room. Collaborate live, drawing, sharing, building ideas with everyone on the same page. And you can make sure more of your team is seen and heard with up to 49 people on screen at once. Learn more all about the newest Teams features at Microsoft.com/Teams. And 49ers Sunday night on NBC. Mike Tirico and the gang get you started at 7 p.m. Eastern time. That is the it's the first matchup in division in the NFC West since week one when the 49ers took on Arizona. Because the Rams' other games have been against the NFC East.
Yeah, they've been traveling.
They're 4-0 against the NFC East. And they're one terrible call of a major comeback win in Buffalo.
Right.
From being 5-0. That's why when I tweeted out on four downs yesterday, I'm like, everybody, you keep sleeping on the Rams night. The response I got in general was like, so they're 4-0 against the NFC East. Well, okay. Dallas was week one. They also had to go to Washington and to Philadelphia. Good luck.
Yeah.
From the West Coast. And ain't easy. The pandemic, by the way. So there's that. Hey, everybody. Now there's more ways to be a team with Microsoft Teams. Bring everyone together in a new virtual room, collaborate live, building ideas on the same page, and you get to see more of your team on screen at once. Learn more at Microsoft.com/Teams. Back here on the Rich Eisen Show with our radio friends and everything. How about Kyle Brandt? I just threw that curve. I truly adore my chats with him. He knows football. He's beyond passionate about it. And he can tell you a story about being on the set with Jennifer Aniston's dad on a soap opera during the Bartman play. And, talk about the starting five of Shawshank Redemption versus the Green Mile, which I threw on him without any preparation. And he just stuck the landing. And Whitman, Price, and Haddad are words I have not heard in a long time from the Running Man. Oh, my gosh. We were going to go poll question with him about Tarantino, right? Because today's the Pulp Fiction
anniversary. Today's Pulp Fiction in 1994. Oof. It's also, like I said, the Bartman play.
No, I know.
A lot going on.
Let's hit this here because I do love pop culture, just as anybody else. Reservoir Dogs was eye-opening. I mean, it was amazing. Groundbreaking, and it was eye-opening, and the Michael Madsen scene, stuck in the middle, all of that is truly one of the most remarkable scenes of a remarkable film by a filmmaker, which he is. He's not a director. He's a filmmaker.
Yes.
He is a cinema man, okay? But nothing that he has done, and I know Once Upon a Time in Hollywood was incredible, and I know everything else that he has done.
Like
War Rooms.
That was great. Nothing will top Pulp Fiction. Nothing.
No, I agree.
Nothing will top Pulp Fiction. Period. End of story. It is his grand opus. From the Christopher Walken watch soliloquy that launches the Bruce Willis section that leads to Marcellus and Zed and the Gimp.
I mean,
and all of that, and that's just one scene. Samuel Jackson, I think we could say, is one of the greatest actors we have been thrilled to call our own here in America. Nothing will beat his performance in Pulp Fiction, which put John Travolta back on the map. Uma Thurman was remarkable in it. I could go on and on and on with Winston Wolfe, Harvey Keitel, is all the way at the end. I will spoil. No, I will alert you to no spoilers. Fine. Go and see it.
$5 milkshake.
Nothing beats Pulp Fiction. I remember seeing that in the movie theaters, and I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like, that is.
Well, and the way he did it, like out of order, that was new.
Right. And telling the story and you know, it's offensive in many ways, but it is great.
Great flick.
So if you have some sensitivities, I would warn you about seeing that film. You know, there are many movies that I tell my son and, you know, my oldest, because he's first up, wait till we watch this together. Yeah. Oh, not ready for it yet. I have yet to say that about Pulp Fiction to him.
It's going
to
be a while for that one.
Yeah.
I love to be with someone watching that for the first time.
I don't know of anybody who's never seen it.
I don't either.
A couple people, friends back.
It just now hit me. You know, we talk about my relationship with Michael Hawley from Brother from Another.
Sure.
It literally 2 seconds ago just hit me. He and I saw Pulp Fiction together in Pittsburgh in 94.
In 94.
Yeah. Wow. I can just now remember that
I don't remember where I saw it. Me I don't remember either. Where I saw it.
Yeah, I don't
know. Had to have been, maybe I was in Chicago at the time. On this date in 1994.
Yep.
I was probably still living in Staten Island, getting ready to go to Redding, California to start my television career. I think, I don't know. I could have been on the road. I have no idea where the hell I was in October.
I think that was one of those ones I got on DVD from Columbia House, you know, the 9 DVDs for a cent. Like one of
my life in the business is responsible from the second AD from that movie, Kelly Kiernan.
Okay.
Who's married to Rob Olant, our friend.
Yeah, my buddy Rob. I'm telling you, there's nothing like it. And you know. I mean, Inglourious Basterds is an amazing movie.
Yep.
And
Django. I mean,
there's many movies we could talk about.
Jackie
but
Brown.
It wasn't even it. What Jackie Brown?
Jackie
right?
Brown.
Yeah. I mean, I it can't even. I that's why I don't even want to make it a poll question today, because to me, it's over. Pulp Fiction is his
it
greatest.
Held so many people that worked on that movie. Karen Rackman is a music supervisor. Mm-hmm. She did Reservoir Dogs also.
Mm-hmm.
She did that movie, Boogie Nights. If you look at her...
Well, Boogie Nights, to me, is the closest you can get to Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
Right? In terms of this long opus. Paul Thomas Anderson is a filmmaker, you know? But probably can't tell him what to do or what, you know, hey, let's cut this scene, you know? But in terms of just also the acting and the writing and the directing...
Yeah.
Nothing touches Pulp Fiction. Nothing. And some of the lines in the film, too. I mean, you know, there are a number of times when I've been involved in a conversation here. Somebody says something to me that I find so egregious. I tell them that their L.A. privileges have been revoked.
The Wolf says my favorite line.
You know,
that's all.
Corolla coming up with the idea, the Ace Man coming up with the idea of the replay gimp right here on this show. We workshopped it where there's a gimp somewhere that does not watch the play in the NFL. They bring him out sort of like the Buffalo. What do you say? It was like the Buffalo in Colorado for the Buffs. You bring him out like make a big deal out of it. And the gimp watches the replay.
Bring out the gimp.
I mean, you could make the argument 1994 is the greatest movie year of all time.
Go for it. We have about a minute.
You mentioned Pulp Fiction. You mentioned Shawshank. This is just the top 10 for grossing. None of those are even on there. Lion King, Forrest Gump, True Lies, The Mask, Speed, Dumb and Dumber.
90 to 95 are amazing.
I mean,
they're amazing.
Murderers Row.
Those are terrific films of fun and whatever. But until you finish up your homework assignment of the Manchurian Candidate.
No year from the 50s is going to come close to 1994.
Oh, my God.
Come on, dude.
Brockman, we can take you to the early 70s and mid-70s. Taxi Driver, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Oh, please.
There's a
Network,
couple years.
Network, Rocky.
Rocky. I mean, there's one year where you just... Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like
come
the
on.
Greatest like movies of all time.
And those are films.
Films.
You're talking movies, Chris.
Yeah.
I love it, Rich.
There are movies and there are films.
Citizen Kane.
I'm a film man. You're a movie guy.
Goonies movie.
Dylan O'Brien of Love and Monsters. James Conner of the Pittsburgh Steelers. O'Shea Jackson Jr. from the Nightmares of Clippers fans. Power 3.